What does innovation sound like? It sounds like the luxury of being in the moment with your customer, client, or patient. It sounds like having the right information right when you need it. It sounds like being at your best for your customers and your business. Thanks to Hyland's intelligent content solutions that improve digital processes, innovators everywhere are able to do their thing better, whatever that thing is. Now, who doesn't like the sound of that? Hyland, for innovators everywhere. Visit Hyland.com.
Hello there, everybody. It's me, Gary Kidney, the co-host of You've Got to Be Kidding Me on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network.
And I am Liam Jones, my full name, and I'm also a part of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network as a co-host for You've Got to Be Kidding Me.
We are a TNA history podcast that covers TNA 1 month at a time. We cover all the drama, all the matches, all the Vince Russo nonsense you could ever want in your life.
Have you heard of TNA? I bet you have, but would it be funnier if two people made jokes over it the whole time? Probably.
So if that sounds like fun to you, check it out on this very Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network, and Liam will do bits and whatnot.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Competition starting to get thick. It's the click, so I hope you watch your A game. A man, no rain on the track when we unite and spit. This isn't A game, better bring your A game. Competition starting to get thick. It's the click, so I hope you watch your A game. A man, no rain on the track.
Hey now, it's the Mike and JD Show, and I am your host, Mike Gilbert, and I'm joined as always by JD, by God Oliva. How you doing, JD?
Not bad, man. Not bad. That our first live broadcast football game of the season tomorrow. I'm pretty excited about it, actually. It should be fun for us at the old high school.
Because your media team is the ones they actually broadcast it, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep. And I got it was really important that it's all student driven this year. So last year I directed everything. So this year I have to hand off my duties to one of the kids, and she's my number one student. So I'm really excited to see how she does. And I'm supposed to just kind of sit back and let it happen. And, you know, I'm a control freak. So we'll see how that goes. And, you know, I'm a little nervous. I'm a little excited, but it should be a lot of fun, man. We got some expectations this year. So yeah. How you doing, man?
Good, man. I'll be honest. I've had a pretty long week. I was telling somebody today, I'm like, man, I feel like I've lived 3 weeks in just this 1 week. But the good news is that I have a 4-day weekend for Labor Day. So that's nice. And my kid has a 4-day weekend too. So, so that works out pretty well.
Labor Day is Monday?
Yeah.
Dude, I have a government job. You think I'd know that? I had no idea until you just told me that. We're off school Monday. Yeah. Sweet. I had no idea.
Yeah. You should probably plan something with the family.
I'm going to. I'm like, holy shit, I could have been planning something the whole week, and I just realized that.
Yeah.
Damn.
Yeah, dude, that happens. Dude, that happens to me all the time because there's so many federal holidays, and I'm a federal employee, so I'm just like, it's hard for me to keep track of them, but I always remember Labor Day because it's my wedding anniversary. I got married on Labor Day weekend. So
congrats. That weekend. What year is this?
Number 9. She has been putting up with my shit for 9 years now.
You had something on the Facebook page. I think it was either this week or early or late last week, something like that, where started with a Facebook request and you wore her down, something like that.
Yeah, yeah. It was 10 years ago that day. So it might have been like 2 weeks ago.
But 2 weeks, okay.
Yeah. So, and I put in the comments, I was like, it started with a Facebook request. And then I said something like, and then we had our first date shortly after that. We were married a year later, and we've been married 9 years. So shoot your shot, Kings.
That's an awesome story.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, man, coming up on 9 years, celebrating this weekend. You know, obviously my wife's like super pregnant right now, so we're not going to do anything like too crazy. We're just going to go get some, we like to go to Hibachi Grill. So we're going to go. Yeah.
Hibachi, good stuff. Dude, my kid is now the biggest sushi fan in the world. He lives for that stuff. He's 8, so it's like he's a little expensive now. He's developing these expensive tastes. I don't know what I'm gonna do with that.
Yeah, it's like, dude, can you just go back to like mac and cheese and nuggets and hot dogs?
I know. He's like, Dad, sushi is so much better. And I'm like, well, yeah, but come on, man. I ain't made of money. I'm like I said, I'm a government employee. You gotta make that much.
Yeah, yeah. You're so funny is that I've lived in Hawaii for over 2 years. I lived 2 years in Japan. I lived 1 year in Korea. I grew up on the West Coast, and I've never once had sushi.
Get out of here.
It scares me to death. I can't do it. I don't like seafood. I've never been a fan of seafood other than tuna, just because we were poor and we just had it all the time.
Tuna cans are great. I love
tuna. Yeah. And then plus when you're a wrestler, sometimes you have to eat like just only tuna for like a week. So like tuna and water to make weight. So I did have to do that in high school. So, I've never had sushi. I don't eat seafood. I've had Joe's Crab Shack. I couldn't stand it. I've had salmon plenty of times, but I got to a point where one time I tried to eat salmon, and I just gagged on it because the taste was so pronounced because there was not enough brown sugar on it.
Wow. So,
yeah. It just made me gag. Like I was like, okay. I'm just not a seafood guy, and I just won't eat it. I refuse. Huh.
That's fascinating to me. I hear that a lot from people. I love seafood personally. So it always surprises me when I hear people that just have such a harsh aversion to seafood. So you don't get the shrimp when you go to hibachi?
No. Wow. No, won't touch it. No.
I'm kidding.
Yeah. And then my wife's pregnant, so she's not going to eat sushi or nothing like that. So
for sure.
Yeah. But man, so earlier this week, I hate to start it off on a sour note today, but I feel like we have to because I want to give this guy the respect he deserves because I was just a super fan of Sid growing up. I was a fan of his when I'm like in my like preteens and then in my teenage years. And I didn't really like get into after this today's show, I want us to retire this term. Is if I never hear this fucking term in my life, I will be so happy. I don't want to hear it again. We've got to retire it. Work rate. It's the dumbest fucking term. I cannot stand it. But he was not a work rate guy. That's the last time I'm going to say that stupid term. But that wasn't. Yeah. So I think he took a lot of shit for that in the 90s because he wasn't, you know, Steamboat and Flair and Shawn Michaels and those guys and Bret Hart. At a time where, but he was over everywhere he went, and I was just so fascinated by the guy. Like everybody makes fun of his promos. I loved his promos. He was absolutely intriguing. I don't care that he didn't make sense. That was part of the art of Sid's promos is that, yeah, he's whacked, right? Like that was, that is exactly what he was supposed to be doing. He was money when he did it. I thought the guy was fantastic. He died earlier this week of cancer. Go to Patreon. I put it on the free tier. I actually did I pinned a tribute to him earlier this week, so I hope everybody gets a chance to read that and check it out. But yeah, Psycho Sid Vicious Sid Justice passed away earlier this week.
I think you and I are outliers here around here because, like, as much as we love the quote unquote work rate guys, I think we can also appreciate wrestling for what it was in its era, right? And Sid wasn't a work rate guy. He was also 6'8", 300 pounds, jacked to the gills, and had hair like a bowl of ramen. Like, yeah. On top of being remarkably charismatic, what sets Sid apart from every other big guy that tried and failed was his personality.
Yeah,
like, there was just something about Sid that worked, right? And like everywhere he went, like you said, he got over. The first program I remember watching as a wrestling fan is 91. It was SummerSlam. I was very casual at the time. Like I was just getting introduced. It was that summer of 91 going into SummerSlam, right? And it was Hogan and Warrior versus the Triangle of Terror. And I remember thinking, wow, Sid Justice is going to be the referee. Who the hell is Sid Justice?
Yeah.
But I mean, like, and then I saw him and I was like, oh my God, he looks like a comic book. A big comic book guy. I'm like, he looks like a comic book character. Like Hogan was always kind of soft and like, he just never had the cut. Like Hogan was big and buff, but then didn't have the cut. Sid was freaking cut. Like Sid looked like $1 million. And there was just something about him. You talk about his promos. I remember this one time he was coming at center stage in WCW 93 during the second Sid Justice run, or Sid Vicious run. During his entrance music, he was walking down the ring. He looked, because in WCW, guys would cut promos on the wild mic to the, they'd just look at the camera and cut promos, right? This one really separated WCW from WWF in that era. And I remember he looks, he goes, and they ask me, Sid, why are you so evil? And he paused and he goes, because I love it. Makes no sense. God, did I think that was the coolest thing in the world. And he went and just murdered a job guy. Like, and I'll say job guy. I don't care. Like,
hold, don't use the J word too much. Okay. We don't want to get kicked off the air.
I don't care. Like, I just, man, I thought Sid was great. I didn't care that he didn't have great matches. Like, he wasn't supposed to. I didn't watch Sid because I thought he was going to have an excellent match. That's why I loved Steamboat. Like, I watched Sid because he was going to do something crazy.
What I think people need to realize that we don't need everybody to slap the leg and kick out of a bunch of stuff and go 35 minutes and have a high paced match. Like, we need a little bit of everything. We need those. I like my big wrestlers to be big wrestlers. That doesn't mean they're not good athletes. They're playing a role of a big ass, badass monster. And that's what Sid did. But I will, to his credit. And I actually, cause I'm very fond of his 1996 run in WWF. You know, it's right before the Attitude Era. I just was just a big fan of his. And so I didn't watch the Shawn Michaels match from Survivor Series. I think I'll probably just check that out later this week because I do remember loving that match. All of his entrance, probably that's the thing I remember the most about it. I remember him smashing Jose Lothario with a camera and then him just being like super over to the Madison Square Garden, and he was the heel and he got over as a babyface, and you know, Vince was obviously pissed about it. But I just remember his Bret Hart matches because I was a big fan of Bret Hart, and so and I was a big fan of Sid, so watching Sid and Bret Hart. I just remember back on those matches fondly. I actually watched two of them the other night, and I was like, you know, obviously Bret Hart is going to get a lot of credit for those matches, but it wasn't like Sid was bad in the matches. Like, Sid was everywhere he was supposed to be. He looked great, and he knew when to turn it on. He knew when to be the monster, and he knew when to sell for Bret, and like, he sold for Bret, and it was believable. Like, Bret is getting him in submission holds, and Sid is selling, and it looked great. I'm not going to sit here and say that he was a classic worker and a technician, but he could, when he wanted to, be a little bit of a better worker than he was being presented on TV, but he was playing a role. His role wasn't to be the master technician. His role was to be the big ass psychotic monster. But he played it very well. And he, like, the moment he came through the curtain, he captivated every audience he was in front of. And it didn't matter the promotion. Your eyes were glued to that guy. And you really wanted to know what he had to say and whose ass he was going to kick.
Couldn't take your eyes off the guy the moment he showed up anywhere. Like, it's so funny, the Skyscrapers, he just so overshadowed Dan Spivey. Like, it wasn't even
he did.
Like, and it was from go. People were like, oh, that guy's awesome. Right. And Dan Spivey, you know, really didn't. It's too bad because I really think when Spivey kind of found himself as a talker was at the very end as Waylon Mercy, you know, and he really never had a chance to go anywhere with that. That might have actually, in that era, might have actually done something. But Sid just so outshined him, right? And I know, like, Sid's job wasn't like, okay, I'm trying to think about how to make this good comparison. Like, everyone has a role to play. Like, if you're watching football, like, your offensive lineman cannot play quarterback, right? Your quarterback cannot play on the offensive line, right? But both parts are necessary to have a good football team, right? Not everybody should be a 6 foot tall, 5'11, you know, muscled up work rate guy or semi muscled up work rate guy. You know, not everybody can be Bret Hart. If everybody's Bret Hart isn't special. If everybody's Sid Vicious, Bret Hart isn't special. You know what I'm saying? Like, you need to have those. And I hate to use the MJF thing, but the flavors of ice cream. I think it works better when you're talking about characters as opposed to, you know, bad matches. Yeah. But like Sid, there was just something different about the guy. And the problem, and I don't care if he wasn't the best worker. I don't care if he wasn't a great draw either. What Sid was he was a compelling television character.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And there's value to that. And I don't care that he didn't sell out arenas across the country. Like, it doesn't matter to me. I still enjoyed watching him on TV. He was still good at what he was supposed to do, which was, again, he never really had a chance to be the guy in any promotion. Like, even when he was the WWF champion, was he the guy? Like, was he like the guy in the company?
I think early on he did get a chance to be the guy, but I think they found that he wasn't reliable.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's the thing too, Sid, is he wasn't reliable.
Yeah.
Right. They might have wanted him to be the guy, but he wasn't capable of it.
Yeah.
You know, and nor should he have been.
Right. So I think so. If you go back, and I'm gonna get into a little bit of his history, and I know a lot of you are gonna be able to read his obituary. I'm sure Dave's gonna do something for him next week. I know Joe and Rich are probably gonna do like a good hour on him tonight. Mm-hmm. But I think JD and I have probably a little bit of a different perspective of our appreciation for him. But I think if you go back, in that 1990 to 1991 era WCW, before he went to the WWF, they were about to give him a ton of money because they did not want him to leave. I think had he accepted that, maybe at that point in time, WCW would have tried to run with him, because I do think that they saw it in him. At that point, he'd already been in like main event matches as a heel, and I think maybe they would have probably went with him. But he comes over to WWF because I think they wanted him to be the next Hulk Hogan, because Hulk was getting ready to wind down a little bit. They had the steroid trial looming, and they looked at him as possibly, you know, taking over for Hulk Hogan, but they immediately flipped him heel, and nobody wanted to do business at WrestleMania 8, and the next thing you know, he's out of there. He just didn't last very long, but I think everybody wanted him to be the guy. They just felt like he just was an unreliable dude.
Well, it's funny because he's given that role because Warrior failed, right?
Yeah.
In 90, yeah, the box office went down. Warrior proved to be unreliable. The very same show that Sid makes his debut is when he basically holds Vince up for the money. Bix and Chris just did a really nice deep dive on that a couple weeks ago in Between the Sheets. And like, the Hogan role was hard. Like, it wasn't like Vince, people had this idea that Vince was like gung-ho Hogan the whole time. Like, he was always trying to look for the guy to replace Hogan. He just couldn't, because Hogan, say what you want about Hulk Hogan, don't love the man, but he was a big draw. He's the most successful draw of his era. You can't argue. Yeah.
And he is one of the most special talents ever in the business. And I know nobody wants to say, and I get it. He sucks as a human. I get that. But he was like, it took them a long time to replace Hulk Hogan, right? They tried it with Warrior, failed. I think they were going to try it with Sid, but they just didn't think that he was reliable. And then they went to smaller guys during the steroid trial. They really never replaced Hogan until Stone Cold.
They tried with Luger too. They wanted to make Luger, which is funny because Sid probably does. So in 91, when Flair bounces, because Flair bounced shortly after Sid.
Yeah.
If Sid doesn't go and Flair bounces anyway, do they go with Sid over Luger, or do they just stick with the plan and go with Luger? I don't know. That's interesting to me.
I think they would have had two options there. I think that they could have headlined with Sid versus Luger.
Something we didn't see.
Yeah, because both of them could do heel or babyface. And I think that's one thing that gets lost in people. I know Sid played a heel most of his career, but there were times where he actually was a babyface. They tried to make him babyface several times.
Survivor Series 96, he is a babyface. And he walks out that curtain at Madison Square Garden, and he's a smart man. Like, he was smart. He knew right away that they want me. So he's fist bumping the crowd. It's and he feels it. Like, I knew Vince is probably pissed off, but I mean, they're smart. I'm sure he did. But I mean, like, Sid, I mean, which is funny because you figure Sid would be what Vince would like, but you know, Vince loved Sean. Sid was Sid. But I mean, like, Sid felt that. And again, I used to love watching Sid fist bump the crowd and just like totally eat it up. Like, Sid was an underrated babyface. And we were going to get a Sid babyface run in WCW 93 before he stabbed Arn Anderson.
Yeah. Because he'd worked Sting at Halloween Havoc in 93. Right. And then, and then they flipped him babyface. He's supposed to headline Starrcade against Vader. And I don't know that he was going to win the title against Vader, but I think, you know, Vader ended up losing it to Flair as the replacement. So, you know, who knows if they would have went with Sid.
Which depends on who you talk to. That was the right move
and
the better story. The story of Starrcade 93 is actually one of my favorite WCW angles. We should actually do a deep dive on that come Starrcade time, because that's an event we haven't talked about. So I think that wound up working out better. It certainly was a better match than Sid and Vader, probably. Although Vader was a really good big guy worker, he probably could have carried Sid to a good match.
Yeah.
But like, that 93 Sid run is an interesting run, because WCW, they have like stars there, but they just can't get their ducks in a row, like creatively speaking. And like the promotion is just kind of snake bit on stuff. It's weird. Like, they have like this Hall of Fame lineup in 93, but nothing clicks.
Yeah, because it was, you know, Bill. I think Bill Watts came in 92.
Dude, Bill Watts is out there in 93. It's Bischoff. Yeah, it's Bischoff and Ole.
So it wasn't. When was Kip Fry was right after Bill Watts? So Kip Fry had some time in 93. Right?
Kip Fry was before Bill Watts.
Got you. Okay.
Kip Fry signed all the big money deals. Watts came in, tried to cut him. Then the Madden interview was unleashed. Watts gets fired in January 93. Bischoff is hired in February 93. And then I think it's Ole. I think Ole books early on, and then I think Dusty's back.
Yeah.
Latter half of 93.
Yeah, because at some point you can tell Dusty's fingerprints are all over it on some point, because
he's wrestling again.
Yeah, he's wrestling again. He's with his son, which his son was great, obviously. Mm-hmm. But then they're doing all these skits, like these really over the top movie style skits. Oh, so yeah, especially with Vader and Sid at the beach. Uh-huh. And like trying to kill Davy Boy Smith on a boat. It's Davy Boy and Sting.
Oh my God, with the little midget, little person Cheatham.
Yeah.
All right, I had to use the M word. My bad. It's wrestling. Don't we actually call them that in wrestling?
Yeah.
Minis. The bomb blows up on the boat, and you're like, oh my God, Sting and Davy Boy are dead.
Yeah. Oh no. But no, they dove in the ocean, and the ocean protected them from the explosions, which is what stupid. Happens.
God, yeah. I love wrestling. And I love Sid. And Sid Justice, Sid Vicious, Psycho Sid, whatever you want to call him. He entertained the shit. I mean, he also had the most gruesome leg injury this side of Joe Theismann than any human being's ever looked at.
Yeah, man. And that essentially spelled the end of his career. He did a couple of indie matches after that, but he came back in 2012 and did a Raw match with Heath Slater. But so I do have some notes here just to run through some of them. So one thing that I learned this week, and I didn't know this, he was actually discovered by Macho Man in Memphis and was trained by Tojo Yamamoto.
That I knew.
Which is pretty cool. And then he bounces around the Indies for a little bit. He ends up going to Japan and wrestling Fujinami. And then he goes to a World Class, and that's where he picks up the name Sid Vicious, named after obviously the Sex Pistols bassist who died in the set. He died in what, 70-something, right?
78, 79. I'm not a big punk rock guy. I don't know enough about punk rock history.
Okay, it was him and Johnny Rotten and
Sex Pistols,
Sex Pistols. But then he ends up getting signed by WCW in 1989, and he formed the tag team of the Skyscrapers with Danny Spivey. They basically saw it, like you had mentioned earlier, they saw it in him immediately. If you go back to watch Halloween Havoc 89. And when the Skyscrapers come out, like Sid just steals every scene that he's in. Mm-hmm. The guy was just had an incredible presence. Some guys just have it, and Sid just had it like from day one.
Mm-hmm. And then there's the magnetic personality. You could tell they believed him because they put him in the Horsemen.
Yeah.
When Sting gets hurt and they're kind of shuffling through Horsemen, Sid, which is an odd call at the time, but it makes, you know, it kind of makes sense when you're looking for guys. God, he almost in, I think it's Wrestle War 90 or no, 91. I forget if it's 91 where he almost kills Brian Pillman. Remember the War Games cage has the lid, and it wasn't like now where those lids are super high. Like those lids are probably only 8 or 9 feet up, and Sid power bombs Pillman, and Pillman's head just smashes into the cage, and Sid tries to do it again. And Pillman just sandbags. I'm like, no, you're going to kill me. No.
Yeah, he was actually out of action for a little bit.
Yeah, Pillman almost killed Pillman legitimately.
Yeah, so they broke up the Skyscrapers. He joins the Horsemen, and then Mean Mark Callis takes his place in the Skyscrapers, but that didn't really last very long. Mark obviously is the Undertaker.
Yeah, that worked out pretty good for him too. So again, Danny Spivey overshadowed. Although I don't know if anybody's like thought of Mean Mark as overshadowing anybody at that time.
Yeah, no, Mean Mark was basically a geek. But yeah, he joins the Four Horsemen in 1990. And then you could tell, like, once they put him in the Horsemen, like, he's with all the top guys at that point, and they know that he has it, and I think he's getting ready for a big push as a headline guy. In 1990, didn't he headline with Sting and Halloween Havoc?
Halloween Havoc 1990 in Chicago. They have a decent match, actually. It's actually probably the highlight of Sting's run as NWA champ, is that little program and match, which is kind of fun until they completely botched the ending.
Well, like, no, nobody thinks of that as a good match because of the ending. Why don't you tell everybody what happens?
So it's a good match, actually, from two guys who are kind of relatively on the inexperienced side. Sting had only been a pro for like 4 or 5 years. Sid had been a pro for like 3 years at this time. So these are guys that are, in the grand scheme of wrestling, pretty green still, are headlining a pay-per-view. It's a pretty good show. Starcade, that's another one we should look at. In Starcade, Havoc 90, right? It's also got Stan Hansen and Lex Luger. Like, the Steiners have a great match with the Nasty Boys. Like, good show. So anyway, Luger, or not Luger, Sid and Sting are wrestling. Sting disappears and then comes back out, but it's very, okay, it's a fake Sting. It's a fake Sting. It's the first time they pulled the fake Sting move.
Yeah.
And it's Barry, it's very clearly Barry Windham. Like, they got Barry Windham to cut his hair like Sting, and Sid pins him, and then they're like, Sid won, and then Sting comes out. It's just,
it's like, it's, wait a minute, you pinned the wrong Sting.
Yeah, and they took, and then Sting does win. It's a complete the match is fine, but just like, Ole had totally lost his fastball by that point as Booker. Yeah. Like, it's just weird, which is so crazy to me that they actually recycled this fake Sting gimmick 6 years later to a much more effective degree.
Yeah, it was something that every company Sting worked for, except for WWE. They just kept going back to it. Like, TNA did it. Like, WCW did it a bunch. TNA did it a bunch. AEW's done it a couple of times. So, yeah, it's just one of those things that just continues to work. But he was, you know, earmarked to be a headliner, but WWF comes calling. They offered him a bunch of money, and then he debuts, as you had mentioned, at SummerSlam 91. And one thing I remember about that match was he was the referee. He's in there with Hogan and Warrior, two of the biggest stars in all of pro wrestling, Hogan being the biggest star, you know, at that point, like biggest, you know, of like the last 25 years. And he's also in there with Sergeant Slaughter and the Iron Sheik. And he fits in with all those guys. Like, there's a bunch of big stars in that ring, and he does not look like he's out of place. He looks like he absolutely belongs. And I just remember, I was like, wow, this guy's going to be a big star. But then at Royal Rumble 1992, he turns on Hogan, gets cheered, right? Like, Hogan. Well, here's the thing, though.
Hogan's a dick.
Hogan was a dick in that moment. He eliminates Hogan. And then Hogan's the one that turned heel. Mm-hmm. And, like, he pulled Sid out of the ring after that. And then that's what started the feud. And so no wonder everybody was cheering Sid. Hogan was the actual one being a dick.
Well, here's the thing, too, is, like, at that point, the houses are going down. Wrestling had been hot for about a good 8 years. And 91 is kind of like the last good year of the WWE, of the WWF golden era, right? Sid actually, so let's not forget, the part two of that SummerSlam main event is Savage and Elizabeth's wedding. And that's also capped by, you know, the wedding reception where Jake officially goes all the way heel with the Cobra. And so Sid comes out and saves the day.
Yeah.
Like, Sid's the one who saves Savage and Elizabeth. So Sid's first program in the company is he takes Warrior's spot. Because remember, Warrior and Jake have been building up this feud for months. Jake was going to take him to the dark side. Remember, do you remember these little vignettes? Corny as hell, fun to watch.
Yeah.
These Jake Roberts Ultimate Warrior batshit promos. They're on YouTube, guys. Trust me. Look them up. They're amazing. But Warrior bounces. Like, Warrior gets fired, and Sid steps right into that role. So he's basically headlining immediately with Hogan, and then immediately with Jake Roberts. And, like, he's over, but then he's Sid. I think it's when he got hurt. I think he punctured a lung or something like that, because Sid is super injury prone too.
Yeah. Yeah. He headlines WrestleMania 8 with Hogan. So Sid was so over, they put him in
with Hogan. I actually meant before the Rumble he got
hurt. Before the Rumble. Oh, okay. I'm sorry. Yeah. I jumped ahead. No, go ahead.
No, so he gets hurt before the Rumble and then comes back for the Rumble. And then people have been getting sick of Hogan.
Yeah.
Like, it's hard to be on top for 8 years and stay hot. Like, the audience had just grown tired of Hulk Hogan. And, like, they wanted Sid. And they show, just like what happened with Michaels 4 years after, they chose Sid over Hogan. And Vince, in just classic Vinceness, tried to erase this from happening. Like, they re-edited the end of the Royal Rumble to take out the booze, you know, for Hogan. It's just classic level of Vince lunacy. And they have Hogan and Sid at WrestleMania as the main event. And what a shit show that was.
Yeah, so the original main event of WrestleMania 8 was Hogan and Flair. They actually had started they had some posters made of it. Like, that was the original plan, but they felt like Flair couldn't draw, and I don't know, maybe they were right about that. They tried the match on house shows, but
so they didn't build it on TV. They did nothing to hype it up, and they stuck Flair and Hogan without a proper build, and they said, see, you can't draw. That's Vince just being, like, self-fulfilling prophecy. Vince, see, Crockett guy can't draw here.
Well, so he knew what he wanted. He wanted Hogan and Sid, so he had to, prove his, creative team, like Pat Patterson and Pritchard and those guys wrong. So he throws him. I think they headlined in Oakland. Like they did a match in Oakland, which is not like it's not exactly a wrestling town, Oakland. So anyway, they ended up going with Hogan and Sid. They turned Sid heel after Hogan eliminates him from the Royal Rumble. The match stunk, ended in a disqualification. The Warrior returned, and Papa Shango like interfered at some point. And before the match even gets started, Sid fails a drug test, but they allow the match to continue. They send him out on the European tour, and he's supposed to serve his suspension, but instead he just goes and plays softball, like in true Sid fashion. So he was a legend like that. And then I think he ended up, I think he might have done a match or two that summer, but he ended up not coming back to the WWF until 1995, I think. But like a year later, he ends up having like some injuries and stuff, and he goes back to WCW, which is the 93 run that we had just talked about.
Mm-hmm. He's gone for a good year. I don't think he resurfaced in USWA in between. I think he just shows up because I remember watching Slamboree 93 because I think somebody has a mystery opponent. I can't remember who. And then all of a sudden,
Van Hammer.
Van Hammer, that's who it was.
Yeah, and Colonel Rob Parker showed up. Yeah,
this giant dong showed up and announced. So I remember watching this because we had the my buddy had the black market cable box, so we were over watching Slamboree, and I jumped. He didn't know who Sid Vicious was, and I'm like, "That's Sid Vicious, Sid Justice, Sid, he's back!" And I got super excited because I'm a nerd.
Yeah.
So yeah, and that didn't work out because Sid stabbed Arn Anderson.
Yeah, so he's actually like a top guy from the moment he comes back. He headlines again Halloween Havoc 93 with Sting. He ends up turning babyface. He's supposed to get the match with Vader at Starrcade 93, but he's on an overseas tour. Him and Arn Anderson gets into it. At some point, I think Arn Anderson introduces scissors into the fight. Sid grabs him and then stabs him multiple times in an attempted murder. He legit like attempts murder on Arn. Rightfully gets fired. And then I think he bounced like at that. That's the point where he kind of bounced around. I think he does some indie shots and
USWA. But,
he went back to Memphis for a little bit. And then he ends up getting signed back to WWF because even though you've got an attempted murder in your resume, like if you're a star like Sid, you're 6'9", 300 pounds. You look the way he does and can get over the way he can. You get more chances than other people. And so they brought him right back.
But it's like a good, because Sid shows up on the WrestleMania and the Raw after the first ever Raw after Mania, in 95, and he got fired in like October or November of 93. So Sid's out of the main company for a good long time, and it made sense too because Sean was feuding with Nash, and Sean needed a new heavy, and like who better than Sid, right? It was it actually made a lot of sense. So booking wise. It clicked. But think about that. Sid tried to kill Arn Anderson and like nothing happened. Yeah. Like stabbed him repeatedly.
Wrestlers, old school, I'll say old school wrestlers, they don't even snitch when someone tries to kill you. Like they're not going to.
But everybody, dude, I learned about this in Pro Wrestling Illustrated. It wasn't like it was a dark secret of the wrestling world.
Yeah.
Like,
I mean, I guess the authorities could have tried to do something, but I don't think Arn would have, went with it.
It's wild to me. Arn got stabbed.
They ended up doing business later.
I know. Like, we're just going to show you how much Arn Anderson loves wrestling, that he's like, that man stabbed me. Yeah, I can make money with him.
Yeah.
Like,
I bet if you were to, like, pull Arn to the side, like, at a bar or something and be like, why would you do business with Sid after that? And he's probably like, well, damn, son, I brought the scissors. And they're paying the money,
My fault for bringing him in the first place. Yeah, I
can bring scissors, don't you? You know, you're probably gonna get your ass whooped. He's 6'9", shit.
Which is funny because Brian Pillman beat his ass with a squeegee. Like, I mean, they get these wrestling stories are just awesome.
Yeah. But yeah, he comes back. He ends up obviously it was over like crazy. He has several injuries, but at the Survivor Series 1996, he ends up he replaces Vader, which is weird because he had replaced like he had gotten replaced by Flair for his match against Vader. Then years later, Shawn Michaels doesn't want to work with Vader because Vader's too stiff for old Shawn boy, for the old heartbreak. And so he's like, well, I want to work with Sid, who also, he didn't exactly have a reputation for working light. People didn't like to take that powerbomb, but he probably was pretty nice to Shawn with that powerbomb.
Yeah, I mean, Shawn and Sid, I think, got along because they did business together for a while. So, I mean, I think Shawn is cool. dude, nobody wanted to work with Vader. Hogan was scared of Vader too. Like Vader had this reputation of killing people because Vader would beat the shit out of people.
Yeah. But he ends up winning the title there. And then he loses it back to Shawn at the Royal Rumble. Cause he was always pretty much a transition champion, like type of guy at that point. Cause everybody felt like he's either going to get hurt or he's just going to quit, which is kind of what, said. Yeah, which is what he did. So here, let's just go back to, he loses the title back to the Royal, to Shawn Michaels at the Royal Rumble 1997 Alamo Dome. Then Shawn lost his smile immediately after he vacated it. Bret Hart ends up winning the vacated title in your house in February in a four-way against Vader, Undertaker, and Steve Austin. And then the next night, Bret lost the title to Sid. And then Sid loses the title to the Undertaker, the main event of WrestleMania 13. He suffered a neck and back injuries that year, and then he ends up getting released that summer, and then he's just gone for a little bit again after that.
Well, he's in that big accident with Furnace and LaFon. Like, yeah. There's a major car accident with those guys, and Sid's legit fucked up from it. Yeah. Like, so were Furnace and LaFon. Like, those guys were lucky not to die in that car accident. So, I mean, like, Sid was kind of injury prone, but I mean, I don't remember the history of the actual accident itself, but I don't think you can blame Sid for the car accident. So
No. He like I said, he had some injuries. He got released that summer, and then the following year, he doesn't return until 1998, and he actually pops up in ECW, and he was kind of doing the 911 gimmick where he was just showing up and powerbombing people, and I remember that, like, very fondly. It was pretty fucking awesome. I was a big ECW guy at the time. And just watching him come in and choke slam and powerbomb dudes. Like, he debuted, and he debuted, I think Judge Jeff Jones is his manager, and he comes in, and then John Cronus is standing in the ring, and he comes out and he just choke slams Cronus over the top rope to the floor through a table, and the shit just exploded. Yeah, that was pretty cool. And then he ends up making it back over to WCW. He ends up winning the world title after Chris Benoit vacated the belt when he went to WWE. So he ends up beating Nash for the title, and then Nash strips him of the title because he's the booker, and then he beats Nash for the title again. But he was a WCW champ. He was the WWF champ on a couple of occasions. He ends up breaking his leg in January of 2001, and that was pretty much it for Sid, man, but it was a great career.
Wrestling Scott Steiner for the title, I believe.
Yeah, he comes off, it was WCW Sin. I think they main evented Starrcade, so he had, like, a lot of main event pay-per-views, like the two WrestleManias, a Royal Rumble, two Halloween Havocs. He had a couple of Starrcades, I think.
He was made it better.
Yeah. He was wrestling Scott Steiner. He's coming off the top row or the middle rope with trying to do a kick where he lands on one leg and he's kicking Scotty with the other one and he just snaps underneath them.
And wasn't he trying to, like, he always did, like, the Kevin Nash Bigfoot where, like, they come in and he would just kind of, split and kick him high. He had, in his mind, he thought that he could jump off the middle rope, kick him in the face, and stick the landing. It turns out, and he had kind of small legs to begin with for a bodybuilder, and that thing just went snapola.
Yeah, it was one of the grossest things. It was like, that you mentioned Joe Theismann, Alex Smith from the Redskins as well. He had the same thing. And then I always think of Robin Ventura when he was sliding. I think he's sliding into third Chicago White Sox. I'm sure you remember that.
Oh, yeah. So,
yeah, it was one of the more gruesome, like, wrestling injuries I've ever seen. But that was it for him, man. But I just wanted to give do justice for old Sid Justice, because we typically we don't do too much on our obituaries. But I feel like you and I were big enough fans that we wanted to dedicate some time to Psycho Sid.
I think that we appreciate him. I don't think you and me aren't gonna like. I don't believe in guilty pleasures. I think you like what you like. I like Yacht Rock. God damn it! Like Hall and Oates. Great. I have no qualm saying, yes, I like Sid Vicious. I didn't like him ironically. I liked Sid Vicious. He was fun.
Yeah, he was fun. Let's go to the chat real quick. We have some people that are wanting to talk about Sid. Io says, put Sid in the Hall of Fame. Yeah, I mean, I was surprised he's not. I'm surprised he's not in it. But I, maybe he's got heat. I don't know. But I think he'll go in now.
I agree.
There's so many tributes are coming down. Everybody's like, have fond memories of him. I think that he'll come in now. Jan says, I checked. Sid was a multiple-time world champion and main eventer yet. Is not in the Hall of Fame yet. Coco Beware is. Look, okay. WWE Hall of Fame is not real. It's a fake Hall of Fame. they do it based on demographic and who they can get in at the time and who they're able to book. And they just never put them in. There's no rhyme or reason to it. It doesn't matter if you're a big star or not. Vince's limo driver's in the Hall of Fame.
Mm-hmm. Vince's dad's limo driver's in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
Like, you got to understand this, guys. The WWE Hall of Fame is not real. Like Mike says, the closest thing to a wrestling Hall of Fame that we really have is the Tragos Thez one in Iowa. That's the closest thing to a real Hall of Fame because it's an actual physical building. The Observer Hall of Fame is probably more prestigious, but I mean, like, it just, we have to stop thinking about the WWE Hall of Fame as being legitimate.
Yeah, it's just another show. Just another show. Yeah. Dobby says Sid rules the world. Yeah. Sid and Mean Mark were both CWA Memphis 1989. Yeah.
Yeah.
A lot of guys came through Memphis, man. So
everybody.
Yeah, everybody, like a lot of your favorites were big. Yeah, he won the title thanks to Steve. So yeah, when he was wrestling Brett, Steve Austin interfered. Brett had him Sid in the sharpshooter. Like go back and watch that Raw match from 97. I watched it. Sid's selling his ass off for Brett. He's making, like, I know he, Brett made Sid look great, but watch how Sid's selling for Brett. He makes Brett look great because Brett is like 6 inches shorter and he's still able to make it look like Brett could kick his ass. You know what I mean? Like that, there's a talent there.
He sold for Benoit too. When Benoit beat him for the vacant title in 2000, like, I know we don't like to praise Chris Benoit, but Sid made Benoit look great too.
Yeah. Yeah. So, anyway, rest in peace, Psycho Sid. We're going to go into one of our top stories. I am going to try to get to bad tweets, although people sent me some bad tweets. The problem is I got there. Two of the ones that I got, yes, they were bad, but they were abhorrent and they're not fun to make fun of. So yeah, I don't know what I want to do.
Funny bad tweets, guys.
Yeah. Like I want someone just sounding stupid. I don't want someone sounding like horrible.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger for thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
But let's go. Mr. McMahon, a documentary series chronicling the rise and fall of WWE's controversial founder, is coming to Netflix on September 25th from Chris Smith, executive producer of Tiger King and one Bill Simmons, including interviews with McMahon prior to his resignation, his family, and some of the most iconic names in wrestling history, as well as the journalists who uncovered the McMahon's allegations. So we are finally going to get this McMahon documentary on September 25th.
I have no faith that Netflix or Bill Simmons will do justice to this story. I don't either.
You know, let me just say, I did enjoy the Andre the Giant documentary. Just because I like to look back at the old stuff. And I like to hear the old stories, even if some of them are not true. But he put on a bunch of quote-unquote journalists who were essentially just fanboys regurgitating what they saw on TV. They weren't really trying to get to the truth behind it. So, but after that, I ended up buying Pat LaPrade's book so that way I can get to some of the real history of Andre the Giant.
I say this is the guy who majored in documentary filmmaking. He's got a handful of docs under his belt. Like, they're not trustworthy. Like, anytime you're working with WWE to get a story, you're going to get their slant on everything. So I have no, and I don't, this might get me heat with people we know. I don't like Bill Simmons all that much, but as far as his wrestling content goes.
No,
like, I don't like any of it. I think it's not good. I don't think any of those Ringer shows are any good. I'm sorry. I know we know people on them, but they're also WWE, yay, yay, rah, rah. Like, I just don't trust any of it not to be, you know, trash.
I don't really have an opinion on the Ringer wrestling shows because I've never once fucking listened to them. Because I know I see what they talk about, and I figure these are just WWE fanboys. They're not actually out to give honest opinions and reactions to things. They're just, like you said, rah-rah WWE type stuff. They want to be in the club.
Yep.
Right. Which is funny because Bill Simmons made his reputation for being kind of like controversial figure in NBA and NFL coverage, trying to expose the truth. But because wrestling is so unserious, they don't do the same thing with wrestling. They don't have the same amount of respect for it. So they just want to be a part of the show.
Are you talking about Bill Simmons or Ariel Helwani?
Ariel Helwani, probably the most prominent MMA reporter we've ever had. And he just does not have any respect for pro wrestling. So he thinks it's funny to kind of be in the world and poke mm-hmm. fun at the people who take it seriously. Right. Mm-hmm. And he kind of gets used in that manner. So, and it wouldn't shock me to see him have a role on this documentary series, to be honest with you.
But that wouldn't surprise me in the slightest. Probably see Sam Roberts or something like that. Just their media friendlies. Like, I just, now, especially Netflix is showing is like a WWE partner. It's like, how can I expect them to be honest with any of this stuff? I have zero respect. I'm not going to, if Dave says it's a good documentary, I'll watch. But until I hear anything like that, I'm out. I'm not even interested.
I'm going to watch because we need content for the show.
That's actually a really good point.
And part of our show is going to be calling bullshit on it. So yeah. I think we should. Yeah. And Io, shout out to Io. He already tagged us. He said that we need to have an ongoing segment. Truth or bullshit. Like that's going to be he named the segment for us. Is it true or is it bullshit?
Okay. I actually like that.
Yeah. Yeah. Talking about the Vince documentary. I'm like, okay, well, if we're going to make fun of it and call bullshit on everything they say, well, now I can get into it.
Now I
don't feel bad watching it.
All right. You got me, Io.
Yeah, he said, yeah, truth or bullshit. He tagged us on Twitter. So, hey, he's a Patreon subscriber, so we gotta come with it. So, but yeah, so that's coming out September 25th, so we'll be on the lookout. So before we get into bad tweets, and guys, bad tweets is coming. Oh, hold on. This is a good point on that documentary. Thurston said that no Janelle Grant mentioned in the doc. I think they didn't interview Janelle Grant. I'm not saying we don't know that they mentioned him because the doc has not been released yet, but Thurston said they did not interview Janelle Grant, or I don't know if they interviewed the lawyer. I don't know what Janelle Grant or anybody would be allowed to say in public on that deal. I don't even, they might've asked her and she said no, but all we know is that she's not in the documentary. So we'll just leave it at that.
She got an ongoing lawsuit. And when you have an ongoing lawsuit, you're not going to play for media friendlies. That doesn't surprise me. If they don't even mention her, then it's just like, I have zero respect for any of these people, which I don't anyway. So, you know.
Yep. So John Moxley returned to Dynamite last night. He did a very interesting interview that he gave. He looks like he flipped heel. He's been heel in the company before, but he's always been kind of like a tweener type of guy. But he flipped heel, and then at one point he made a remark that was eerily similar to one Scott Hall from 96. I don't know if that means anything, but talking about Tony, this is not your company anymore. Something to that effect. He was talking to Tony Schiavone, but Tony Schiavone had an earpiece on, and the other side of the earpiece was Tony Khan, and they have conditioned the audience to know that the messages that Tony Schiavone is saying is coming from Tony Khan, right? A bit convoluted. They need to probably hammer that message home a little bit more, but I picked up what he was trying to get at.
I did not. I'm glad you pointed it out to me. I was really confused.
Okay. Yeah. So he was talking to Tony Schiavone, but Tony Schiavone had an earpiece. So he was really talking to Tony Khan saying, this is not your company anymore. And then later in the show, him and what's her name?
Marina Shafir
are beating up some enhancement guys, some J words in the back, and jabrones. We can say jabrones, right?
Yeah,
we just can't say jobbers.
Yeah, jabrones.
Jabrones. We can say jabrones. Yeah, in the back, some local talent that are working in security. They're beating their asses. So it looks like, you know, he's bringing back some type of like Fight Club gimmick. It's all over Twitter. All people are talking about it. A lot of people are insinuating that maybe this is the Shane O'Mac thing. We've talked about Shane O'Mac before. I don't know. Shane McMahon is like that's a more of a believe it when I see it type of thing.
I could actually see Shane McMahon coming in. I could see Tony really wanting to work with the quote unquote good McMahon. Right. I could see that. I don't see how Shane McMahon connects to whatever Moxley's doing. I can't see John Moxley, who has control of his own creative, saying, you know who I really want involved in this new storyline of mine? Shane McMahon. Yeah. Like, I just, that doesn't work for me, brother. I don't, and I'm not saying, I'm not going to shit on it. Like, we have our I forget who we were tweeting. You and I have a text with so many people. I forget who this one was with. You know, I said, well, I'm not going to shit on any storyline before it plays out. My favorite book of all time is about an alien who eats children's fear and who was essentially defeated by the equivalent of clapping for Tinkerbell. You know, that's it. You know, that's it. That's how they beat Pennywise. And it's the best book I've ever read. But when it's so I don't want to shit on anything before I see it, because it could work. But Dreamcatcher was a big piece of shit. So anything, you know, even the greats can fart out some bad ones here and there. So I'm not.
Yeah.
I'm very cautiously optimistic. But I just don't see how you include Shane McMahon unless it's like the Raw Underground thing from like 2020. I can't well, see
and
that.
Then
like
John, look, John Moxley. I think John Moxley and Shane are probably friends. I think they're both big UFC fans and MMA fans. In fact, our old website that we worked for, Fight Game Media, before you and I started our podcast, John Moxley had a podcast on there with Garrett Gonzalez doing UFC recaps and UFC previews with and I used to, me and Garrett had heat because I never got invited on that show and I kept begging him. I was like, bro, you have me call in when it's like Hafiala Sunsau and these other cats on these small UFC shows and Moxley's not there. But when Moxley's there, it's the biggest show, and you fucking call Justin Nipper, our buddy.
Barry and our buddy.
So he's a big MMA guy. I know Shane's a big MMA guy. He did the Underground thing. At one point, I think he wanted to buy the UFC. So I'm pretty sure that, look, let's just say they're probably friends. I think they're probably friends. But I did see somebody tweet out that it would be it would be a statement move to have Shane McMahon debut in New York at Arthur Ashe Stadium. There were actually people in that stadium, I would agree, but there's only 4,000 in a 20,000 seat arena.
Yeah, I don't, they shouldn't be running Arthur Ashe. I know Tony is like idiosyncratic with how he wants these things run, but you know, you got to move it. They shouldn't move that show somewhere else. Run like the Hammerstein or something like that. Like,
yeah,
do something cool like that if you have that many people there. But I guess you got contracts locked in. So I understand where you're coming from on that. Debuting a McMahon in the company. And I get why Tony would want to do it. He's like, I'm going to have a McMahon on my show. Like, because right. I was talking to my wife, does not like pro wrestling at all. And we were just bullshitting before the show started. And I said, guess who the rumor is coming to AEW? And she just rolls her eyes and goes, who? Like, she does not care. And I said, Shane McMahon. And she actually picked her head up from her phone and went, are you kidding me?
Her?
Yeah. Like, it was one of those. I'm like, no, that's the story. And she went, that's crazy. And then for my wife, who's not even a casual wrestling fan, she's not even a casual wrestling tolerist. Like, for her to sit there and go, huh, I can understand why Tony would want to do it. And I'm not going to shit on it. I'm not going to say it's bad. It's not what I want from my company, because it isn't what I want from this company. But they don't do what I want. So, I mean, like, that ship sailed a long time ago.
Yeah.
So, like, I get why he's going to do it. If this is the way to do it and Moxley is in control of it, okay. But I don't know, man.
I don't know. You're not going to shit on it before it happens, but I will. Because I think it sounds fucking stupid. Yeah. The last thing I want is Shane McMahon in that company. And but it, like, I do have a weird curiosity to see AEW fans turn themselves into pretzels to say how much they like Shane McMahon and AEW, because they were shitting on that guy when he was on Raw all those years.
Sure were.
You know what I mean? So I love that. I love hypocrisy in pro wrestling fandom. It's one of my favorite things. I love it in sports. I love it in politics, and I love pointing it out. So I cannot wait to see that. I tweeted out like a month ago when it was first rumored that he could be coming in, that like AEW fans are slowly talking themselves into it. And they are. They're still talking themselves into it.
Did you listen to me on this show the last month?
Like, yeah. I'm at, like, you, it's like we can see JD slowly. I'm like, you know, maybe it wouldn't be so. My wife likes it. Maybe it would.
I don't hate Shane McMahon. I think I enjoy watching an old man who's really sweaty jump off things. That mildly entertains me. Same. If I have to put up with a McMahon, I would rather put up with Shane than any of them. I'll take if a building's on fire and I have to save either Shane McMahon or the brother-in-law, I'm going to save Shane McMahon. Right? I will let the brother-in-law stay in there. I'll save Shane. That's okay. It. Like, I think he's like, I'm trying to find the right analogy. Like, he's a vegetable that I would eat. Like, he's not Brussels sprouts. I'm not leaving him on the plate. I've always kind of felt that way. But yeah. I don't love it, but I'm willing to be won over. Maybe.
Well, we'll see. We'll see how it works out. I got a couple more notes. MLW was they were on the air tonight. Io, can you tell me the name of the MLW show that was on? But they were live on YouTube tonight, and their entire feed just froze, and they lost audio, and they lost audio for a while. And what's funny about it is that Carney Court got that big settlement, and part of what he used that settlement for was to not only bring in some talent, and he's brought in some good talent, you know, and he's worked with New Japan and CMLL, and he's got good champions. MLW Summer of the Beasts, okay?
That's a terrible name for a show.
It's a terrible, and he actually usually has pretty cool names like Super Fight and Battle Riot. Summer of the Beasts is not one of them.
That's not a good name for a show at all. That's like a bad movie from the 70s.
Yeah. And apparently they went off the air, and then they come back on the air, and one Donovan Dijak is in that company right now. So that's where he has landed, and MSL is his manager apparently. So MSL is quite possibly the worst pro wrestling television character going right now. He's unwatchable, but that's what Donovan Dijak is doing. But
he used to
since we got tagged in it by IO, I wanted to bring it up on tonight's show.
Sorry, he used to do that when MLW was just a podcast network. He used to have podcasts with like Kevin Sullivan and with Court, and he was just like, he would just talk about himself like he was somebody in pro wrestling all the time. And I'm like, who do you think you were? Like, you just,
didn't he like run a wrestling school with a sex offender and then now he's got his gig?
Something like that. I have no idea. Is he a Chase and Rance guy? I'm not even.
I don't know. I don't. Maybe actually, let's cut that out. I don't know. That might be me not knowing what I'm talking about. That definitely happens a lot. So I probably should not have said that. But I shouldn't say a lot of things, unfortunately.
Yeah, we're idiots.
Yeah, we're idiots. What do you think of what do you think of All Out coming up in 2 weeks? Looks like we got Bryan Danielson versus Jungle Boy Jack Perry in the main event. Will Ospreay versus Pac, which should rule. And then I'm trying to remember. Oh, cage match, Swerve and Hangman. Yeah,
that is the main event. Let's be clear about this. Swerve, my kid and I have tickets. I told him Swerve and Hangman in the main event, and he goes in a cage, and he's like, "Oh, Dad, that's going to be too bloody for me. I'm not going to be able to watch it." He's so matter of fact about it too, because he just knows what these two guys are going to do. And the blood kind of, you can look at blood from Moxley, because he always goes, whenever somebody bleeds, he goes, "Oh, he went full Mox." Like, he always says, it cracks me up. And he's just like, but with Swerve and Hangman, like, those two legitimately scare him when they wrestle. So it's going to be crazy intense. Jungle Boy and Jack Perry, the Jack Perry character interests me. It's been interesting lately. I don't know if I'm thrilled with him and Brian, quite frankly. Like, but it's only a 2 week build, so I guess you don't want to squander his first defense on like something interesting. So you got to kind of, I think this is a bad idea. I thought so last year. I think so this year. I think doing these two shows back to back is just not good for a show build. But two of the three matches they've announced seem pretty cool. So, you know, whatever.
Yeah. I think that the Jack Perry match is a bit of a letdown. Like, I just have, like, Jack Perry's not a bad wrestler.
No,
Jack Perry can have good matches. I just don't find him interesting, and I don't find him interesting in a main event level. But I have felt that way about him for a long time. They're doing it in Chicago, and I'm just like, you guys get over that already? It's like, it's getting, now it's just, now you're just kind of weird.
So, I like to use weird. That's a great term.
Yeah. Thank you, Tim Waltz, by the way.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Tim Waltz, great guy. So I was in the arena, Wintrust in Chicago in April when Jack Perry had his New Japan swan song. That dude was over as a heel because of that stuff. So if you're in Chicago with I didn't think about this till you just said that. If you're in Chicago with a short build, you don't have to do much. You don't have to lean into the punk stuff. You can just put Jack Perry out there in Chicago and people will do it. So, okay, I get that.
I just feel like that roster's so deep. They think they have a lot better options, but it's the one that they went with. I wouldn't have been interested in Christian either. You know, Christian won the gauntlet match. I wouldn't have been interested in that, but I just feel like I could probably name 10 other dudes off the top of my head.
Darby's got a shot, but now I'm starting to think they're going to do Darby versus Danielson in Tacoma.
Yeah,
for the pay-per-view, which makes sense actually in Washington.
Yeah. If Darby beats Moxley, I think with Moxley going heel, I think they go Moxley and Danielson at some point. I think that's probably the big match to close the year, really.
I think I could see it actually, because it would bookend Brian nicely. And I think Moxley, we have to work Moxley back into this company. And we were talking with our buddy the other day, and I said, I think Mox needs a fresh coat of paint. I think the time off has been kind of nice, but I mean, he's still the heartbeat of this promotion. So, I mean, I'm okay with them doing something a little different with him. Yeah. If this is Mox's Bret Hart 97 run, I'm okay with that.
Yeah. All right. Real quick, what are your thoughts on All Out? I already did a podcast on it. I went live. I did 52 minutes earlier this week. Numbers for us, by the way. But what'd you think of All In? I'm sorry. All In. What'd you think of
it? It was one of the worst shows I've ever seen. No, I'm totally kidding. I love it.
Yeah, yeah.
I just stunned you for a second.
I was like, wait, we just talked about this. I already know the answer. Why are you saying this?
Because I'm an asshole. No, I loved it, man. It took me 2 days to get to the show because I was watching it with my kid and he had bedtime. So I just love watching wrestling with my kid. I did a video. I posted to my Twitter of my son is, he loves Darby Allin so much. He was literally jumping up and down the entire match. Thrilled. And then when he lost, he just buried his head in the, he knows it's not real. He knows it. But he's so invested in Darby Allin, the little short blonde guy, that he just lives and dies. That's how I'm always going to think of that show. Man, did I love that main event.
Yeah.
With Swerve and Bryan Danielson. What a match. What a story. People who say this company doesn't tell stories are completely stupid. They're okay. So full of shit.
Be careful what you say, because I did get kicked off of Twitter earlier this week for suggesting that somebody, if they think AEW doesn't tell stories, that they should, go up to a high point and then just jump.
I'm not telling anybody to kill themselves. I'm just telling them they're stupid.
I wasn't doing that either. Hopefully there's a soft landing, but.
Yeah. Ospreay and MJF was great. I really liked that match a lot. Well, say what you want about MJF. When he's in the ring, he's become one of the best workers in the world. He truly is. Him and Ospreay have unbelievable chemistry. I thought the Daniel Garcia thing worked, and it bookended that story nicely and pivots to another program. I thought that the tag match, the three-way tag match, was boring.
Mm-hmm.
I thought I was really disappointed with it, to be quite honest with you. I really like the Casino Gauntlet thing. I think they have something with this gimmick. They've been experimenting with this casino thing since the company really started, and doing it as a gauntlet that can end at any moment, it gives it a flavor similar to the Rumble, but makes it its own. Because like I said, the first time Roderick Strong didn't even get out there. So you can have this gauntlet match end in 2 minutes and everybody gets screwed over. And at some point they should do that.
I think they should too. Yeah. I really enjoyed it. I thought it was one of the best matches on the show. Unfortunately, I actually watched that live, and for some reason I thought it was a Royal Rumble, and then Jeff Jarrett gets thrown over the top rope and he comes back in. I was like, why is he still this is an outrage. And then Ricochet is diving over the top ropes, and I'm not knowing what's going on. And then I was like, oh, it's the same thing they did in Jacksonville when Ospreay won. It was the same match. I didn't even because so much wrestling has happened between then. I completely forgot that I already had done it, and it was awesome before. This was the second, I believe the second time they've done this, and it was great. Yeah.
Yeah. I think they should do this quarterly, to be honest with you. And if it gets hot, maybe it's something you can do on a pay-per-view maybe you can make it a big thing on a pay-per-view every year. I don't know.
I would keep it to an annual and make it a big deal. And kind of like, their Royal Rumble, but I wouldn't call it Casino Gauntlet pay-per-view, but I would if you every year they do it on All Out, it's just something they do for All Out. I think that would be cool.
Kind of like what Money in the Bank was when it was a WrestleMania gimmick, as opposed to being its own show. Yeah, I agree with that. And I there's not a ladder involved, so that is always good. Oh, but I did like the ladder. I always bitch about ladder matches, but I typically enjoy them when I watch them.
I hate them, but I end up loving them every time.
Yeah, same problem.
I'm just they should really only do it once a year too. It's way too old at this point. They do them every pay-per-view. They end up suckering me each time.
Because they're always damn good. And watching Pac have his moment in Wembley was great. I'm like, oh, Well, this kind of rules. Watching Nigel have a moment. Didn't see that coming. Should have been setting up for a fucking year. Like should, having.
I think that they need to, on one hand, I think they need to re-educate the audience as to who Nigel is. Because I do think that it's been so long since he's been a worker that everybody kind of there's a whole generation that only sees him as an announcer, right?
I agree.
So I think they have to reeducate people to how badass he is. But there was also a part of me that wanted him to be the challenger instead of Jack Perry. That would have been cool for guys like us. And I was not even a big Ring of Honor guy, but I was always fascinated by Nigel, and I went back and watched a lot of his Danielson matches that he had and. During that Ring of Honor run, I was like, okay, you know, I think I would want that, but I know for a fact that it wouldn't do as well at the box office. So I know why they're not doing it, but I think they got to go to it at some point.
I think it's a good TV match to do at some point, to be honest with you. You could throw in a Collision or something like that, or maybe an episode of Dynamite, and it would be fine if you did the story. Were you a big Desmond Wolfe guy, Mike?
I did like Desmond Wolfe. I legitimately liked him. Of course I felt like they started out, he was getting a push immediately. Mm-hmm. They did the Kurt Angle. He had a really good match with Kurt Angle. I think it might've been a lockdown. I can't remember what pay-per-view it was, but he actually had like a marquee match, but then Hogan and Bischoff just came in and they were not
Hogan and Bischoff.
Oh. Yeah. Yeah. So,
yeah, I loved it. I thought All In was a great show for most part. I didn't love the women's title match.
I liked Mariah May and Toni Storm.
That's
I like
one.
That one. I did not like Sasha and Britt Baker. Yeah. I didn't care for that one.
No, so. Nor did I. I was surprised by the definitive ending of it too. I was like, oh, kind of done with Britt. Huh? It felt like it. Like, where do you go from
there with her? Might be time to move on there. She's a little bit of a pain in the ass, apparently. I don't know. We'll see. But
sometimes doors are open, sometimes they're closed. Yeah. So yeah.
All right, let's get to bad tweets. All right, I only got a couple of them, but the first one of the night, I was debating on whether or not I wanted to do this, but I feel like I talked to Rich earlier, and I feel like it's okay to do this after discussing it with Rich.
You had to get the boss's permission to do part of our segment? Oh, man.
No, I did not. I did not. He asked me what was on the docket for tonight because they're going to plug the show.
Oh, appreciate
it. So I told him, I was like, bad tweets, but I really don't have many bad tweets. He's like, well, if you go to my story that I posted and look at the tweets there, you're going to get 50,000 bad tweets. Use what you want. And then me and him had a discussion about all of the shit that he took. But he is a grown-ass man. He's way more famous than me, and he can fight his own battles. So I didn't want to come on here and fight battles for him. But it's the end of the show, and so most people have logged off already. So so let's just go with it. The first bad tweet, Matt Taven. He quote tweeted Rich's story about Sid being best bad wrestler ever, saying these people are evil. And he got a bunch of people attacking Rich and attacking Joe. And I'm like, guys, he's saying that with love. He means it in an endearing fashion. Sid was not a classic work rate, and I hate the term work rate, but he wasn't a classic work rate guy.
No.
He was a bit clunky at times. But he always was awesome. That's what he means. Like, even though he wasn't like the greatest in-ring worker, he was awesome. That's what that meant. So, most people that got mad at that didn't read it, but he said that with a lot of love, and I guarantee you tonight, they probably did close to 90 minutes on how badass Sid was, but nobody wants to say that. They want to attack the headline and not actually what the intent behind the story was.
What really disappoints me there is that Matt Taven couldn't even be funny. Like, yeah. It's like, you can't, like, these people are evil. That's a terrible tweet. Like, that's not even a fun, bad tweet. That's just, at least make a joke. Like, God.
Yeah.
Disappointing. Like,
yeah, yeah. And look, if you're close with Sid and you took that the wrong way, I get it. But it's one of those things you could probably reach out and find out what the intent is. Instead of if you're a famous guy quote tweeting it and then send a bunch of people hating on it. And I'm like, you guys are totally misreading exactly what's going on here. That whole story was written with a lot of love and affection for Sid, the wrestler. So got to get Rich's back on that. All right. Let's see. Hold on. Let me get back to my share screen here. Sorry, folks. This is bad television or bad radio. All right. This is actually a good tweet. Some guy went and trolled him at one of his rallies.
Hell yeah. Look at the shirt, the MAGA powers. We're going to destroy the woke. What are they going to do when we drop the big boot on trans and we drop the big boot on everything? We're going to drop the big boot on Social Security. Does that work for you, brother? Trump is a real felon. Then he went to Epstein Island. Trump, no physical, no political violence. No political violence. No political violence, though.
That was a good tweet. Sorry.
That's not a bad tweet at all.
Yeah, that's not a bad tweet at all. That was a good tweet.
Holy shit, that was fantastic. That guy had dynamite.
Yeah, that guy was awesome. I don't know who that was, but it's been shared everywhere. So God, I wanted to play it.
I've been off Twitter for like 2 weeks basically. I gotta get back on. I'm missing good stuff.
Like you are missing good stuff.
I did. I'm disappointed in me. Like,
yeah,
anytime you can make Hulk Hogan uncomfortable in front of people, good job.
Yeah, good job. Rovert, our buddy Rovert, he discovered a bad tweet. This was sent to me by King of the North. King of the North. This is his favorite segment. He is not with us tonight, but Bulky Ray said this: referees in a wrestling match should never be seen until it's time to be seen, and then you flash back to WrestleMania, and here's Bulky Ray in his pinstripes being seen before the match. Now, I don't know what in the world this context was about. I don't know why he was mad. Somebody said it might have been Aubrey, the referee in AEW, but I don't know.
Because it's a woman, so you have to come down on Aubrey because she's a girl, and he gets to do what he wants because Paul Heyman did a great job of accentuating his strengths and hiding his weaknesses. And there's no one that's ever ridden out his 15 minutes of fame more than Bully Ray Dudley. God, he is so irrelevant. I don't even want to get mad about this guy. Like, go do your dumbass busted open show and suck off the WWF teat a little bit more, you fucking dweeb.
Yeah. I don't know what in the world he was mad about there, but he was mad about something. But somebody did put a good tweet underneath. I don't know, dude, this made me laugh so fucking hard. I don't know why. Sometimes I like to go through and read what the replies are to some stupid shit. So this guy replies to Bully Ray, and he says, "Bully Ray, big fan. Used to smoke meth with my ex-wife back in 01 and watch you and Devin Dudley," or whatever his name was, "put people through tables. Devin, get the tables. LOL, take care, sir."
I don't know if that's a gimmick or what, but it's something.
Yeah. Wow. That's not a bad tweet either. That's actually an awesome tweet.
That's lunacy, man.
Yeah. Oh. Now this is what I'm talking about here. I got this one from Paul Fontaine. It came out that Nikki Bella was a victim of domestic violence, and this jackoff said, "I suppose Nikki Bella was better off with John Cena. Shame." So, guys, and I'm only putting this up here, don't send me these ones because I want to have fun and make fun of stuff. So please don't send me stuff like that. There was another one that Front Row Brian said that got sent to me. I don't want to get into that one either. But it had something to do with blaming Janelle Grant. I'm like, don't send me stuff like that. Like, those are disgusting tweets. That's a whole nother level of abhorrent and demented. I don't want anything to do with that. So please don't do that to me. But I just using that one as an example because that one did get sent to me. Wow. So yeah, don't do that to me, please.
Man, I have been off Twitter. I didn't realize Nikki Bella was a victim of domestic violence. That's awful.
Yeah, I think it came out just today.
How are we supposed to make jokes? Like, God damn, guys, this is.
Yeah. But here, we will leave it on this. All right. Wade, our buddy Wade.
Oh, Wade. I like that.
Submitted a tweet made by me. I actually think this might be AI, but he says this is from me back in July 31st, 2022. Apparently I said, I don't think I said this, but it looks like it's here. Super Bowl. This is July 31st, 2022. Super Bowl coming to San Francisco. Trey Lance is the MVP. JD, do you know what Trey Lance is doing right now?
I do not, actually.
He is the third string quarterback for the Dallas Cowboys.
I got to give our buddy Wade some credit. He went deep to find this thing over 2 years. Anybody that goes that deep to put you in your place is scores high points in my regard. So well done, Wade.
Honestly, I think he might be a little bit of an asshole that way.
Why listen to us?
to go back 2 years into my timeline to find something stupid that I said, which I don't think you need to go back that far to find something dumb that I said.
Nobody did, and that's what's impressive. Yeah. That's a hater. That's an all-time hater move. Yeah, I have nothing but respect for that.
Yeah, well, Trey Lance went to North Dakota State University, and he hates North Dakota State. So, because Wade's from North Dakota, so there's a bit of a rivalry there with Wade. But hey, guys, that has been bad tweets. Thanks to everybody for your submissions. I will put another call out here pretty soon to do that again. But if you ever just find one and you want me to talk about it, just tag me in it. DM it to me, and we'll try to, if we have time, we'll try to get it on the show. But I did want to make sure to get to that tonight. So because there's been a lot of bad tweets out there. They happen every day. So,
and there will always be bad tweets. It's a gimmick that we can run forever. Like when Jay Leno used to read typos from newspapers.
Yeah. Headlines. I always thought was good from Jay Leno. All right. We got a couple questions, then we're going to call it a show. Danny says, do you guys think Shane McMahon shows up in AEW? We kind of covered that a little bit earlier. So I honestly think that'll shake things up and maybe just what AEW needs. I don't know if it's what they need, but I do think it would shake things up. I do think it'll draw short-term interest, but I don't think that it would do much.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I think it's probably going to happen, to be honest with you. There seems to be enough smoke around this fire that I think it's probably real.
Andrew Zarian's talking about it. Sean Ross Sapp's talking about it. A lot of people are talking about it. Enough people are talking about it where I think it's probably going to happen, you know, but we'll see. And then it looks like Gable Steveson. Yeah. He got cut by the Bills this week. Look, Gable Steveson's never played football and he got a tryout with the Bills. So I kudos to him. Hopefully he sticks with it. If not, I hope he goes to MMA.
I think MMA might probably be in his future. I can't see anything else unless they could pick him up on the practice squad. He didn't play high school football. This kid was one of the most elite high school wrestlers of his era, and elite high school wrestlers rarely play football. So fuck Nick Khan and Triple H for not letting him wrestle in the Olympics this year and costing us a gold medal. Fuck those guys. I will never, ever forgive Endeavor, that piece of shit company, for screwing our country over. Bummed that Gable got cut, but you know, it's football and he's not very big. You know, there was a guy.
He's playing D-line too. You got to be a big dude to play D-line.
So there was a dude who won the Worlds in 1995.
Stephen Neal.
Stephen Neal was a world champion and a multiple-time, three-time NCAA champion, did not play high school football. And when he did not make the Olympic team in 2000, lost to Kerry McCoy, the Patriots gave him a shot, and he wound up having a multiple year all pro career with the Patriots.
Yeah.
So, I mean, which is can happen.
Yeah. Which is like, he was the template, right? Which is why Brock Lesnar ended up getting an opportunity with the Vikings, and which is now why Gable Steveson got an opportunity with the Bills. So like they'll take flyers on people with their 90 man roster. But a lot of them don't make it, but you know, they just got to stick with it. You know, if Brock Lesnar would have been willing to go to the European Football League, like that NFL Europe back in the day, and if he'd have been willing to go to the CFL and get some reps, he might have actually ended up making a team one day. But, you know, he's starting from scratch, essentially, because he did play high school football, but, you know, it'd been a long time.
It's hard. It's a hard game to pick up at a high level. It's hard to be – dude, there's good college football players that never sniff an NFL roster.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, guys, I think that's going to do it for us this week on the Mike and JD show. As always, head to Patreon, go to patreon.com/TheMikeAndJDShow. I don't know how I'm going to do it, because TNA Emergence is tomorrow night. Main event is Josh Alexander versus Nick Nemeth in an Iron Man match. You're going to go 60 minutes. Show is sold out, so should be a good show. They got a lot going on. But that's tomorrow night. I typically record on Saturday mornings, so I might get my recap in for tonight's Impact. If I get to watch it tonight, I might get a chance to recap that tomorrow, put that on the Patreon, and then Saturday, and then watch Emergence tomorrow night, and then on Saturday do my normal show. But if not, I might have to do a double show on Saturday. But I'm going to get two recaps going this coming up weekend. And I'm also going to talk about, hopefully there's some new developments coming up in the Observer, but looks like the WWE might be moving out of Orlando, or they might be adding a second PC in Las Vegas. So if they move out of Orlando, TNA currently conditioning the Orlando NXT audience to to like them, right? Like Rosemary was on TV this week. Joe Hendry's getting ready to main event No Mercy coming up on Sunday night. So maybe there's a little bit of conditioning happening, and maybe they can kind of slide in and take over some of that audience there in Orlando. So we'll get the latest details on that and talk about all that coming up this weekend on Brace for Impact. But you guys should have two shows coming up this weekend out of me.
Should be another Killing the Town. I got to sit down, buckle in, and just finish that story. Grad school always T-bones everything, but I'm determined. We're going to finish it up in the next 3 weeks, I think.
Cool. All right, guys. That's going to do it for us this week. And until next week, mahalo.
Competition's starting to get thick. It's the click, so I hope you watch your A-game. Amen, no rain from the track when we unite and spit. This isn't A-game, better bring your A.
Do you like wrestling trivia? Then check out the 5-Star Match Game, the Pro Wrestling Quiz Show. I'm Joe Gagne, and every episode, I grill 3 contestants with 5 rounds of power-packed wrestling trivia. We have over 30 evergreen episodes in the archives covering WWE, AEW, Japan, Mexico, and much, 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 much more. Play along at home and check it out today.